Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on lying deceivers when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. Now, the best part about this marriage and marriage license is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of the above, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it's more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about that marriage contract than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Now, 67% of all marriages here in the United States end in divorce. But whether you're a husband or wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. Now, that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of that marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of having the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for our free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and that marriage contract. Just call us direct. Call and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Hey, I got a book in front of me here talking about lying deceptions here as it relates to advertising and food products and milk and raw milk and pasteurized milk. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized by William Campbell Douglas. It's an old copy. It goes back to the 1980s. But I'm an old-timey businessman, so let me share a couple of pointers here as it relates to business and advertising. Now, when you're in business, you have to advertise. You have to advertise your business, you know, the location of it and what you sell and one thing and another. And then from time to time, you have certain products. And in these products, you know, you want to advertise, you want to sell these products. So I've come to a conclusion, and here's what it is. All advertising is packaged lies. And I think that that's just about 99.9% correct. It doesn't have to be. Once in a while, there's probably an ad out there that's 100% truth. But for practical purposes, that's wishful thinking. Advertising is an art form of lying and deceiving the public into buying things that they don't need, can't use, and shouldn't have. And we're good at it here in America. We're the world's best. So all advertising contains lies, mistakes, deceptions. Some of them are inadvertent. Some of them are overt. But the general rule is when you see an ad on television or you hear an ad on radio, it's a lie. It's not true. At least in part, if not in whole. And I can tell you that from being an old-timey advertiser myself. And I learned how to advertise, and I learned how to package my product and lie about it and get it past the Federal Trade Commission. Now, there are certain rules that we have to follow. I mean, you can't just come out and lie. You have to lie within the bounds of good taste. So the Attorney General gets in on the picture. And so when we advertise, the Attorney General and the state legislature set down certain guidelines that we have to follow so that the lies that we're telling you conform with the rules, you know, the rules of the game. And the rules of the game don't require that we tell you the truth. Let me give you an illustration here. You take Sue B. Honey, for instance. That's a trade name. And it's registered and copyrighted and patented and, you know, and all the good stuff that goes with it. The word pure is the key word here in the title, Sue B. Honey. Pure Sue B. Honey. We presume that when we look at the word pure, that it means 100%, but it doesn't. Not at all. So when you're in the grocery store next time and you look at pure Sue B. Honey, and I'm not picking on Sue B. now, so if you're the counsel for Sue B. and you want to sue me now for defaming your product over here, you know, lighten up. It's all in good fun here. The Sue B. people are telling you the truth. It is pure Sue B. honey. But that does not mean that it is pure honey. You got that? You presume that it's pure honey because it says pure, and then they add the words Sue B., that's the company's brand name, honey. And yes, there is some honey in it. But is that bottle of honey 100% Sue B. honey? Yes, yes, absolutely. That's 100% Sue B. honey. God help anybody else out there that uses that brand name, like Coca-Cola, you know. Now, Coca-Cola, you know, that belongs to a company. And you can make cola all day long. You can have George's Cola. You can have Bob's Cola and Tony's Cola and Martha's Cola. But God help you if you go out there and make Coca-Cola now without having a license from the Coca-Cola bottling company. Now, here's the ruse. Here's the trick. The company goes to the legislature and says, now, we own this trade name, Pure Sue B. Honey, and we want some legislation here that in our product exempts us from this word pure. We want a legislation that says if you have a honey product, and this applies to anybody making honey, see, or selling honey, that if it contains 51% honey, that it can be called pure honey. So the legislature, always anxious to please business, passes the law, and it says, you know, in effect, if your honey, if you're advertising and you're putting honey out in the marketplace, if it has 51% honey, you can call it pure. Now, this honey has pure fructose corn syrup in it. Now, some of this honey has 5% corn syrup, and some 10, 15, 20. Now, I don't know of anybody that puts in 49%, but if they wanted to, they could. If they wanted to, they could. Now, you'll see this with juice also. When you see juice, you know, it'll say reconstituted in small print down here at the bottom. But up on the label, it says pure juicy juice, you know, or whatever they're calling it, you know. And then you find, well, it's not fresh juice. It's not whole juice. The number one product that's in here is water. You know, you look at the label, and it says number one, water. Okay, so number one, you're buying a bottle of water that is flavored with corn syrup and various other stuff. And so the deception in this is that it leads us to believe. See, the wording that we use, we want to use the word natural. That's a buzzword. Natural does not mean that it's organic. Natural means that it's in its original state. So you could take cornflakes and call them natural. But it doesn't mean that it's natural corn. I mean, it could be made out of all kinds of chemicals and dyes and sprays. So the word natural is a buzzword. The word pure is a buzzword. And we use those words very liberally. And the legislature puts that into the legislation so that we can lie to you people and deceive you. It isn't that we're lying to you. And I want to delineate between lie and deceive. A lie is where I know something is correct. I would say to you, pure Subi honey. And I'm not lying to you at all because this is, in fact, pure Subi honey. The fact that it's 49% corn syrup and 51% honey complies with the law so that we're telling you the truth, but we're deceiving you into believing that this product is 100% honey and that it's pure honey when in fact it's adulterated honey. In fact, it's even adulterated fructose syrup because it isn't 100% syrup and it isn't 100% honey. But that's the impression that we leave you with. That's what you believe when you pick up the package and you buy it. Now, we do this with homogenized milk. You know, they'll tell you that this homogenized milk, or this pasteurized milk here, is full of calcium. And the dairy industry has been telling us that for many, many years. They come to us and they say, milk is full of calcium. And they're not lying to you. Milk is indeed full of calcium. It's got lots of calcium in it. The buying public then goes out and buys the milk and says, well, I need calcium, so I'm going to buy this milk so I get this calcium out of this milk. There's a lot of other places for you to get calcium. Probably one of the best places doesn't have anything to do with dairy products. It has to do with a vegetable product called pigweed. Pigweed, also known as lamb's quarter. It has three times more calcium in it, 318% more calcium than spinach. Spinach is a good source for calcium, but lamb's quarter is even better. And it's better than milk. See, in other words, there's other places for you to get calcium other than milk. Now, here's the deception in milk. Once the milk has been pasteurized, it kills the enzyme. Now, there's 2,000 enzymes out there in the world. When God designed this process over here, he made 2,000 enzymes. And every one of these enzymes has a role to play in nutrition and health. Now, you don't have all 2,000. I mean, you might only have 50 or 75. Lions have enzymes, and alligators have enzymes, and you and I have enzymes. And now, these enzymes, they do certain jobs that we need done in the digestive process. And in the case of cow's milk, there's a digestive enzyme in that milk, and it's only found in that milk. You won't find it anywhere else. And you have to have it in order to digest that milk. Now, when you kill the enzyme with heat, which is what pasteurization does, the enzyme is no longer there, can't digest it, and you can't assimilate the calcium. So you can drink all the milk you want, but you don't get any calcium out of it. And I say you don't get any. You get a little bit, but you don't get anywhere near enough. And so that's a deception. And it's a lying deception because the milk industry knows that. I mean, they're not dumb. They're not ignorant. You and I are, but they're not. And they do that, and they do it on a routine basis, and then they send you to public school, see. And then they send you into health class, and they tell you how safe and healthful and nutritious milk is and how you ought to drink more of it and one thing and another. And now, milk is very good. God himself in the Bible called the land of Palestine a land of milk and honey. And in the Bible, he talks about milk and honey and butter of kine and one thing and another. So there's milk is good for you. It's just that pasteurized milk isn't. That's the ruse. And so we assume, you know, we presume that this is the state of affairs when in fact it isn't. Now, I got a book here in front of me. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness by William Campbell Douglas. Why don't you look that up? Douglas has a website, and if you'll put that name, William Campbell Douglas, MD, he's a medical doctor, into a Google search, it'll show you where his new website is, or something newer than what I've got here. And he's selling this book yet under a different name. It's come out under a different title. You, if you bought this book and paid $100 for it, it'd be cheap at double the price. And it'll tell you what the deceptions are in the dairy industry. But he's got a chapter here on ice cream, and it's so funny, and it's so it's so good. I like ice cream. If God made anything better than ice cream, he kept it for himself. That's what I always tell people. If God made anything better than a pig to eat, he kept it for himself. But just because pig tastes good does not mean that it's good for you. And just because ice cream tastes good does not mean that it's good for you. In fact, it's a killer. Just because milk tastes good doesn't make it good for you. It can be a killer. It's a poison if it doesn't have that enzyme. And it causes crib death and autism. And there's all kinds of diseases out here, you know, that this milk, pasteurized milk, causes, does. And we don't know about it. And then, of course, the powers that be deny it. I mean, you know, if I said crib death caused by vaccines, you know, they'd jump up and down. They'd say, no, 1,000 times no. And one time Oprah Winfrey was interviewing a guy, and they're talking about meat, you know. And the meatpacking industry down in Texas sued Oprah Winfrey for telling the truth about meat, you know. And so, fortunately, she won the case, and I'm happy for her. But I just wanted to tell you that the liars oftentimes will use the law to attack you and punish you. So if you think that you've got some right to free speech, or you put that out of your head right now. But anyway, here's ice cream, and it's a story. It's on chapter 13 over here. Let me share a little of that with you. I think it'll be very illuminating. Now, I eat ice cream every once in a while. In fact, the other day I was in Brahms, and we had some ice cream. But I don't eat a whole lot of ice cream. I eat some. And every time I do, I know that it's got antifreeze in it, and I know that it's poison. And I come home and I take a couple of charcoal tablets or capsules there and see if I can't detoxify myself from it. It's like smoking a cigarette. You know, if you're eating a scoop of ice cream, you know, you might as well just light up a Roy Tan or something, you know, and take a couple of big drags off of it. It's just about as healthful and nutritious as smoking a cigar, but it tastes real good. You know, you just can't beat that. It's like Coca-Cola. It tastes good. Hershey bars taste good. And broccoli and Brussels sprouts taste so bad. You know, I'm going to ask God in the judgment, now, why didn't you make broccoli and Brussels sprouts taste like Hershey bars and York peppermint patties? You know, what were you thinking of when you made broccoli? Anyway, you need a scoop of ice cream. If you're an ice cream freak like me, watching the manufacture of ice cream at Altadena Dairy is almost like having a religious experience. The temple is the storage area where rich, luscious, creamy, natural, raw cream, gorgeous ice cream is stacked 3 stories high. Now, Altadena ice cream is the only raw milk, raw cream, completely natural ice cream available in the entire United States of America on a commercial basis. That tells you a lot about the status of our food supply here in America. Nero, the emperor of Rome in the 1st century B.C., was an ice cream nut. He would have royal runners fetch snow from the mountains. The kitchen would cover it with honey, fruit, or wine. Nero loved this ice mixture so much that he made it illegal for everyone in the Roman Empire except himself. No one paid any attention, of course, but it was still his exclusive bailiwick. In the 13th century, Marco Polo proved that the Chinese were ahead of us in practically everything, so he brought back an ice cream formula from China. King Charles I was also an ice cream freak. He issued a 17th century royal decree to his cook that he must not divulge his ice cream recipe to the peasants. George Washington was crazy about the frozen delight. He kept 2 silver pots just for his ice cream. Dolly Madison served ice cream at the White House. Now, Altadena ice cream isn't cheap. Neither is Häagen-Dazs, Copenhagen, Mathis, or Shiloh Farms. Other top quality brands are equally as pricey. But with ice cream, cost and quality do not always go together. And a survey in Chicago, for example, rated one of the lowest priced ice creams as the best and the most expensive as the worst. This was a flavor test, and it had nothing to do with nutritional value. When you're eating ice cream, one doesn't usually think much about nutrition, but you can have ice cream that is both nutritious as well as delicious. Most ice creams are delicious, but they are poisonous. Now, the first commercial ice cream was marketed in 1851 in Baltimore, Maryland. The producers at that time didn't know how to make modern ice cream. They believed that all you needed was raw milk, fresh eggs, cream, butter, and natural flavors. Today, a typical commercial ice cream contains skim milk, two kinds of sugar, our favorite waste product, whey, then mono and diglycerides, polysorbate 80, gar gum, chemicals, flavors, such as vanilla, pronounced van-lin, and chemical colors and carrageenan. And that's only the beginning. I'll come back to additives after I tell you about the Alice in Wonderland called Standard of Identity. Now, with most processed foods, regulations require that the processor tell you on the label what the product contains. Now, granted, many of these regulations are vague enough, and although they don't have to tell you what has been done to the product, they must at least say on the label what has been added to the product. But that's not so when we're dealing with pasteurized, homogenized milk. You see, milk and the milk boys producing these milk products have a standard of identity. You got to write that down. It's a legal term. You know, it's just like pure Subi honey. This is called standard of identity. And I put that in all caps and quotes because it's a magical term. You see, the bureaucrats at the Department of Agriculture invented that term, standard of identity, to allow the milk industry to get away with murder, or at least nutritional mayhem. You see, they never have to tell you what's in the milk. See, you feed your children this milk because the government regulators have given milk producers a special dispensation. It's like religion. They have said essentially that everyone recognizes milk and milk products, so we trust the milk producers. Milk is milk, and so they don't have to tell us what they're putting in the milk, as long as they heat it before they sell it. So if they're selling us pasteurized milk, they can put whatever they want in there, arsenic, whatever you want to put in, and they don't have to tell you. So your milk contains a lot of additives that you don't know anything about, and we're not telling you. Now, that's deception. It's not a lie, and that's because the legislature says they don't have to tell you. But because every other food product has to tell you, we presume that if they were putting something in the milk, they would have to tell us, and they don't. Isn't that special? See, that's what deception's all about. Now you say, well, that's hard to believe. Well, just ask the National Dairy Council, Rosemont Hill, Illinois. It's Rosemont, Illinois, 60018, to send you a copy of publication B300-1-1978, entitled Newer Knowledge of Milk. Table 3 on page 14 is very revealing. They don't have to tell you anything about the nutritional content of pasteurized milk or ice cream. They can add chemical coloring, emulsifiers, stabilizers, chemical flavors, and nutritive sweeteners. That's sugar to you and me. And they don't have to inform you on the label either. Now, the name brand may even be different from one week to the next. That's the magic of standard of identity. It's a confusing term meaning simply license to deceive. Okay, so if you wrote down standard of identity, put an equal sign behind that, then it means license to deceive, and it's created by Congress and your state legislature. Now, grandmother never realized it, but ice cream is held together electrically. There are only 18 tablespoons of liquid and a full gallon of ice cream. Hey, hang on to that. Write that down. You wait until you tell your husband tonight. When he comes in from work and sits down at the table, you serve him ice cream for dessert. And then you tell him, sweetheart, I want you to tell me how much liquid is in a gallon of ice cream. He'll never guess. It's 18 tablespoons. Okay? Ice cream is mostly air, oil, and ice crystals suspended in water. Air, oil, and water don't mix very well. It's the negative electrical charges that keep everything in suspension and give us that sinfully delicious mix. Now, presumably, they could put WD-40 in their product if they wanted to. You know, if the ice cream industry wanted to put WD-40 in there, because WD-40 is just fish oil. It's oil, but it's fish oil. The main ingredient in ice cream besides air is milk fat. And there's only one reason the ice cream manufacturers use milk fat. It's not legal to call it ice cream if you don't use milk fat. Now, you see, there's ice creams out there that they can't call ice cream. They have to call it something else, you know. I forgot some of the names of them there that you use, but there's frozen stuff out there that looks and tastes like ice cream that isn't ice cream because it doesn't have milk fat on it. So, here again is another deception. You know, we presume that these products that we're buying over here, you know, are made out of milk fat. In the case of ice cream, it is. The fat in there is milk fat. But in all these other imitation products, it isn't. There's no milk fat in it. In fact, non-dairy ice cream, like non-dairy everything else, is made from coconut oil. And peanut oil would seem inevitable, and it's already standard in England. In fact, as the refinement of our foods continues, don't be surprised to find ice cream that requires no refrigeration. Just leave it in the box on your pantry shelf for a year or two. When you're ready for some, you just add some Noble Glop, add water, mix it in your blender, and pop it into your freezer. Now, we told you about using the human mouth as a disposal system back in our junk food chapter. The ice cream makers do it also. You see, water pollution laws since 1960 have forced the cheese companies to find a new way to dispose of whey. Whey, W-H-E-Y, it's a milk byproduct. It's like fluoride or fluorine in the aluminum industry. It's a waste byproduct that has to be disposed of properly. Now, the human gullet has proven ideal, and it's a cheap way to increase the milk solids in the ice cream to the legal minimum limit. Dr. Philip G. Keeney, Department of Dairy Science at Penn State University, commented, "Nobody uses whey for any positive reason. They use it because it's cheap and because it's allowed." Whey. Whey is a waste byproduct of cheese making, and it has to be disposed of properly. We can no longer just dump it into the Mississippi River to get rid of it. See, we now have to dispose of it properly. So it costs money to take it out to the landfill. So some enterprising fellow said, look, let's take that whey and put it in the ice cream. People love it. And we can kill two birds with one stone. We can get rid of this waste byproduct, and we can actually get paid for it at the same time. So instead of having to pay to have this waste product taken to the landfill, we can actually charge for it and get rid of this waste by putting it in the ice cream. Now, talk about ingenuity. I don't know who thought that up, but whoever that was, you can rest assured, took home a bonus for the year. Now, whey has a metallic flavor that a buzzard wouldn't like, but enough sugar and artificial flavor will cover everything. Dr. Keeney concluded, quote, in a way, ice cream has become the sewage treatment plant of the cheese industry. Now we come to the bad part. See, that's the good part. Now here's the bad part. When you order a banana split at your neighborhood ice cream parlor, you may get vanilla-flavored ice cream, chocolate, and strawberry, but you'll probably get iperanol, which is a lice killer for the vanilla flavor. You got that? Now, iperinol is used for killing lice. It's a deadly poison, but it tastes real good. So if this is a taste test, you can't beat iperinol. And you may have amyl phenyl acetate for chocolate and a solvent called benzyl acetate for strawberry. The toppings will probably be aldehyde C17 for cherry, ethyl acetate for pineapple, root trilatide for nut flavor, and a paint solvent called amyl acetate for that great banana flavor. It's all economics, boys and girls. It has nothing to do with nutrition. Aldehyde C17 costs 7 cents per gallon of ice cream. Real cherries cost 35 cents a gallon. So we would rather buy a 7 cent chemical than a 35 cent real cherry. There are over 1,000 different chemicals used in commercial ice cream. How about those beautiful colors added to ice cream to make your little one's birthday a truly memorable event? You will get tartrazine, that's yellow, to upset his little stomach, dicamine red 6B for red, and indiotine for blue. And he can also be poisoned with amaranth, PonQ2R, and titanium dioxide. These coal tar dyes are the major source of artificial coloring. Many of them are known to be potent cancer-causing agents. Now, if you're using them in ice cream, it's okay. But if you were using those to paint automobiles in a factory, oh my God, you'd have to have the OSHA people in there and government agents in there to protect the workers from inhaling this stuff. It's cancer-causing. But if you put it into a food and stick it into ice cream because of the standard, you see, that's that standard rule again. What'd they call that again? Standard of identity. Because of that standard of identity rule, they can put it in your ice cream. They don't have to even tell you it's in there. So, just in case you were wondering about advertising and deception in your food, that's why I titled this, you know, Lying Deception. They're not lying to you. My God, they're telling you the truth. Or they're just not telling you anything at all, which is legal. It's immoral, it's unethical, but it's certainly legal. And we do this on a routine basis. That's why I started this program, and I said, advertising of and by itself is simply a controlled lie that is presented to you for the express purpose of deceiving you into buying this product that you don't need, can't use, and shouldn't have. Now, isn't that just real special? Hey, it's a halfway point, and I got to give you a reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in Compact Desk, and the Law Hour website is updated every week and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Then click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. And we're talking about lying deception, or lying deceivers. That's people. Those are the guys that are actually writing the ad copy. This book is called The Book of Human Kindness. It's not pasteurized by William Campbell Douglas, M.D. This one was published back about 1980 or something like that. There's a new one out, from what I understand. And if you'll go to... he's got a website, and he's got a lot more information on there. If you're looking for health and nutrition, this guy is a health and nutrition type medical doctor. And he'll blow the whistle for you, and he'll tell you, well, that's just garbage, and, you know, even a pig ought not to be eating something like that. But he's got this book. It's called The Milk of Humankind. It's talking about pasteurized versus raw milk. And if you're drinking pasteurized milk, it would probably be a good book for you to buy. And I think he'll get you off that pasteurized milk. That's a killer. It's a toxic waste. And you may not be able to find raw milk. If you can't get raw milk, then you'd probably be better off if you didn't drink any at all. I've got raw milk. I drink raw milk every day. In fact, I quit drinking Coca-Cola and I started drinking raw milk, and I made it to 70. First Gordon in five generations to make 70. I don't know if it was the raw milk or it was the lack of Coca-Cola or a combination of the two, but I just thought I'd throw that out there for you. Okay, the guy's name is William Campbell Douglas, M.D. I think if you use that whole name, William Campbell Douglas, M.D., plug that into a search engine, I think you'll find his website. It'll be well worth it. If this book sold for $100, it would be cheap if it was $100. I doubt if it cost you over $20 or $30. But it's well worth it, and it's an eye-opener. Going on here, he says, coal tar dyes are the major source of artificial coloring. Many of them are known to be cancer-causing agents. Now, a single ice cream may contain as many as 55 chemical ingredients. Got that? One ice cream. You know, you go and you buy, typically buy a half gallon of ice cream. That thing may have 55 chemicals in it. Just that one gallon. And many of those are cancer-causing. So, if you're wondering why we Americans have such a cancer problem in the United States, it isn't just ice cream, but it's one of the causes. It's all these chemicals that you're sticking in here. Your body can't handle all that. It reacts to it over time. And now, we go back 100 years before we had all the ice cream and all the sugar and all the good stuff, you know, that there is to eat today, and we find that cancer affected one person in 33 in his lifetime. Today it's one out of two, and they tell us by 2020, this is 10 years from now, 2020, Every single person statistically in America will come down with cancer at least once in his lifetime. Now, if that's what you want, stick with the program you've got. It's a proven winner. Stick with the food regimen you've got. You can't lose. Now, if you want to avoid cancer, heart attack, stroke, and all these other diseases over here, then you might want this book and you might want to make a change. You need a good emulsifier to make ice cream. It gives it a characteristic stiffness and richness. Grandmother, not being wise in economics and knowing nothing about chemicals, used fresh eggs from the hen house. Today they use diethylglycol, which is antifreeze, and polyoxodinoline, which is a suspected cancer-causing chemical, and they also use polysorbate 65. It deceives you into thinking that the ice cream has a high cream content. As a thickener, you may find diacetyl sodium sulfosinate, which is a chemical used in medicine as a stool softener. Isn't that just special? Just in case you need it. One of the most common additives to ice cream is carrageenan. And with this chemical is added to water, or when it's added to water and fed to guinea pigs, they develop ulcers. Some scientists think it may cause ulcerative colitis in humans. Commercial ice cream is loaded with sugar. Sugar causes diabetes, and according to Norman Kretschner of Stanford University, sugar is a major cause of atherosclerosis. A person with hypoglycemia, that's low blood sugar, may faint or have a convulsion from eating sugar-laden commercial ice cream. These convulsions may be from the sugar or from the chemicals or from both the sugar and the chemicals. Now, we could tell you about the additive CMC causing tumors and polysorbate 80 causing premature death in experimental animals, but I guess you get the message. If you want to go on an Eskimo pie in the sky trip, eat more commercial ice cream. Something else you should know, unlike milk, there are no federal standards setting the maximum number of bacteria to be allowed in ice cream. So as we pointed out in Chapter 4, pasteurized ice cream has been a not infrequent source of food poisoning epidemics. And they really get away with murder when they sell you reworked ice cream. Reworked. Write that down. Wait until you tell Bob over the dinner table tonight about reworked ice cream. That's a euphemism for covering up stale ice cream and selling it as fresh. You see, they just throw it back into the fresh, add more chemicals, and presto, America's fun food is on the shelf again. Now, if you want to test this out, go buy some ice cream and stick it in your freezer. Just leave it for 6 months. Bring it out and take a taste of it. I mean, that is glop. So, what happens when the commercial boys do the same thing? They made this ice cream, but they didn't sell it in 6 months. And now it's stale, and so now we got to do something with it. So we rework it. They bring it back to the creamery, back to the factory, and they stick in, you know, all this stuff and more chemicals and more sugar, and they have this reworked ice cream. And you can't tell it from the regular stuff. Isn't that special? I knew you'd like that. Well, reworked is a euphemism for covering up stale ice cream and selling it back as fresh. If you like chocolate, please raise your hand. The best way to disguise the poor quality of reworked ice cream is to add a lot of chocolate. So there's not much good news about chocolate and a lot of bad news. If you don't want to be turned off on chocolate, then just skip to page 250. Now, the following information on chocolate comes from the newsletter of Tom Cooper, MD of Atlanta, Georgia. As I can't improve upon it, I'm just going to repeat it here. It says, almost everyone with a weight problem has a chocolate problem. Since I have a hard time resisting chocolate myself, I decided to see if there was anything that it would turn me off. So I struck pay dirt in the first reference book that I consulted, and in a Food and Drug Administration policy guideline reference publication. It seems that candy bars don't grow on trees after all. Over half the chocolate that we consume comes from cocoa, Cocoa trees are found in West Africa, in countries like Ghana, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and Cameroon. Now, the cocoa tree grows in a lush tropical environment, and it has a number of fungi and insects that are enemies to this plant. So it's necessary to spray the trees with a number of control chemicals, including organic and potentially toxic fungicides, and could remain in small amounts in the harvested cocoa beans. The cocoa trees produce a certain number of seed pods every year. These pods are harvested and the cocoa beans are removed manually by natives. They're then spread out on the jungle floor and allowed to ferment, a nice way of saying rot. For 5 or 6 days in the jungle, heat and humidity, there's nothing to keep insects and small animals from nesting in and feeding among the beans while they're drying and while they're exposed to the elements. So it's common to find animal droppings, dead insects, and animal hairs in this fermenting collection of cocoa beans. Now, after they have stayed like this for the required period of time, they're packed in jute or plastic bags and then stored in harbor warehouses until it's time to load them into the holds of ships for transportation to this country. In these warehouses and ship holds, they're again subjected to the ravages of resident rodents and insects. The cocoa bean is a rich source of fats and carbohydrates, and it's relished by both rats and insects. The resulting mixture of cocoa beans, insect fragments, rodent droppings, leaves, and rat hairs is unloaded in this country and is then taken to one or another of the various chocolate processing factories. A conscientious effort is made by these companies to remove as many of these contaminants as they possibly can. But the thousands of tons of raw material processed every month make this a virtual impossibility. So to quote the FDA manual, quote, "The action levels are set because it's not now possible and never has been possible to grow in open fields, harvest and process crops that are totally free of natural defects." Now, you can translate natural defects into rodent hair, insect fragments, and animal droppings, also known as feces. There is, and I know you will be comforted to know this, a level at which the FDA will seize a product and not let it be sold. So if 100 grams, that's about 3 ounces of chocolate, exceeds an average of 60 microscopic insect fragments or one rodent hair, when 6 similar samples are analyzed, or if any one sample contains more than 90 insect fragments or 3 rodent hairs, then this sample will be rejected by the FDA. I suppose this means that if there are only 59 insect fragments or only one rodent hair per 100 grams, then we're all right. Animal waste is normally the color of chocolate, and it cannot be tested for or with any great accuracy. The cooking process destroys almost all of the germs, so you don't need to worry about germs. So I guess this means that it's reasonably healthy. Nobody is hurt by this contamination, since the hairs and insect fragments are partly protein. But the aesthetic aspect of chocolate with all of this possible filth mixed in has made me less likely to eat it, and I'm afraid that when I bite into a candy bar, the crunch may not come from the peanuts. It may be from something else. Now, here's a word of caution about sherbet. You should avoid sherbet like you would soggy cigarette butts. This light, cool summer delight is strictly bottom of the line. Sherbet have very little milk solid. The milk solids are replaced by a heavy dose of additives and sugar, and there's over a pound of sugar in every gallon of sherbet. Ice cream sherbet, you know, when you buy. Did you get that number again? That's 1 pound of sugar in every gallon of sherbet. Isn't that special? The National Dairy Council, whose job it is to inform the American people about dairy products, says rigid government standards assure consumers of ice cream's purity, healthfulness, and high quality. So belly up to the ice cream bar and order an antifreeze frappe, sorbation soda, lice killer coolant, paint solvent sundae, and a terra sodium pyrophosphate split or a red dye delight. Yummy. All right, boys and girls, here's another deception here, so let's understand it. When you see a package, you see meat, you see a product, and it's marked FDA approved, you shouldn't feed that to your dog, much less eat it yourself. So if you see something that's FDA or U.S. government or something like that, you can rest assured that that isn't fit for human consumption. And that's because the food industry goes to the government policymakers, the legislators, and they bribe them. These are called campaign contributions. Now, they're not called bribes in this country. God help you if you bribe somebody. But you can campaign contribution these people. See, that's legal. See this deception that goes on here? By calling it something else, campaign contributions, instead of a bribe, it's okay. We can buy that. Then the legislature enacts legislation and says, well, pure sous vide honey, you know, you can use that word pure, you know, in conjunction with sous vide honey, as long as it's got 51% honey in it. The deception is, the rest of it is high fructose corn syrup. And then by using this standard of identity phrase, you know, on food, we can put anything we want in there. We don't have to tell you about it. So, you know, your government is a co-conspirator right along with the business concerns to deceive you, to not lie to you now. They're very careful about that. They're very careful. They give you enough information that you can make the wrong decision. Isn't that special? Give you enough information to make the wrong decision. All right, now that's the story on ice cream. Now there's another story back here. And it deals with pasteurized milk and other products. You know, pasteurized, homogenized milk is bad enough, but wait until you hear about the milk substitutes. You can now purchase from your neighborhood grocer pasteurized, homogenized dipotassium and calcium phosphate with hydrogenated vegetable fat, sodium caseinate, sugar, of course, artificial flavors, of course, gar gum, natural color, carrageenan, salt, and all blended with that wonderful food, sodium silicolanuminate. This chemical concoction looks like milk, tastes somewhat like milk, but there the resemblance ends. Do you know what sodium silicolanuminate is? Okay, listen to this. Write this down, Mary. Bob will never believe you if you just tell him. Write it down. If you're not a chemistry professor, that's known as sand. Sand, S-A-N-D. Did you know that? They make a product here with ground up sand. That's to give it more body. Isn't that special? We want to make it thicker, you know? We got to give it some body. We put sand in it. Now, this sand is smashed up into a powder. See, I mean, it isn't sand particles. It's sand in a powder. Now, they don't tell you sand. See, they put on the label over here this sodium silicolanuminate. And you don't know what the hell that is, and so you say, well, it must be good because it's FDA approved. That's why I told you. If it's got FDA approved or Department of Agriculture or USDA or something like that, you know, don't feed that to your dog. I'm pretty careful here. I protect my dogs and my chickens from a lot of this. In fact, I was over in Black Canyon in Colorado. And it's a U.S. government park, is what it is. And I was in there, and I was amazed. And there's a sign there that says, do not feed the animals. Because they have little chipmunks and squirrels and little little animals running around there. It says, do not feed the animals. Human food is not good for them. Well, what in the hell would make you think that human food is good for humans if human food is not fit for a rat? You know, all a squirrel is a rat. Just a different variety. It's a rat. And they say, do not feed human food, you know, your potato chips and pretzels and stuff like that, to the rats, because it's not good for them. Which you'll find here in the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized. You got a section in here, they've done some rat studies, and so they take some of these chemicals and foods and they feed them to rats. And the rats get cavities, their teeth rot out. Well then, if you feed this same food to humans, don't you think humans' teeth will rot out of their heads? We test this stuff on rats, and we get these reports back. It's not good for the rats, it's not good for the squirrels. But we feed it to humans. I don't know. I'm just a reporter. I'm just giving you the information. And I'm just hitting the top of the, you know, just skimming the top. I'm not getting into anything really heavy or serious here. That's why this book is so good. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. William Campbell Douglas is the author. The fat used in most of these ersatz milk preparations is coconut oil. They use coconut oil because it's cheap, and that's also why they use it in soap. Yeah, coconut oil is used in soap. Now, one of the biggest get-rich schemes since the Florida land boom and the Dutch tulip craze is the high-powered promotion, which is now going on for these milk substitutes, which is made from waste product of cheese production called whey. So they're using this stuff now, you know, so that they can get rid of the whey. The main reason for these products is to get rid of the whey and to turn it into a marketable product. And so they come up with milk substitutes. The reason you got this milk substitute, it's because you're lactose intolerant. And why are you lactose intolerant? Because you pasteurized your milk, which kills the enzyme, the only enzyme that we know of that'll digest this milk, and so that makes you lactose intolerant. Isn't that special? We pasteurize the milk, kill the enzyme, then you can't digest it, so they come back with a milk substitute and say, here, drink this. Because, see, you won't be lactose intolerant with this, you know, which is probably true. You know, probably true. You shouldn't be lactose intolerant to coconut oil. Or this artificial milk. It doesn't contain any dairy product at all. It's just totally something new. And they put sand ground up in it, you know, and they put all these various products, and they put stabilizers and expanders and one thing and another in, and flavors and sugar, you know. When they get all through, you got a product called artificial milk here, see. And then they go out here in the marketplace and they sell it. And they tell us that it's healthful and nutritious, and it's eaten by the astronauts on their way to the moon. You know, like Tang. Tang. Nothing organic in Tang. Hey, I'm out of time here, boys and girls. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, around the world, in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. There's the signal. It says my time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.